A young couple were out running some errands on a Saturday morning. At one point, Jordan dropped Elizabeth off at the mall so she could do some window shopping while he went to get a haircut. The last thing he said to her when he dropped her off was, "Remember, money's tight. We can't afford any big purchases." "I know," she says. An hour later, he stops back by the mall, and there she stands at the entrance in a brand new pair of designer jeans that look like they cost a small fortune. "Elizabeth," he says to her, "I thought we agreed. No big purchases." I know, she said. "I was just trying them on for fun, but then I got so tempted. It was like Satan was saying to me, you look really good in those jeans. You should get them." "Elizabeth," he said, "you know what the Bible says we're supposed to do in situations like that? You're supposed to say, 'Get thee behind me, Satan.'" "I did," she said. "That's exactly what I said." And when he got back there, he said, "Mm-mm, girl, it looks even better from back here." Life is full of moments that test us. It happens all the time. You find yourself in a situation where you can either be frugal or lavish. Or you find yourself in a situation where you can be kind or abrupt. A situation where you can be faithful or faithless. A situation where you can be generous or selfish. And all those moments put together make for a life. A wise person once put it this way: what you will be, you are now becoming. Let those words sink into your soul. What you will be, you are now in the process of becoming. All of those little choices that I make moment by moment get cobbled together to become the story of my life. That's precisely what today's Bible passage wants to talk to us about. By all the choices that you are making, who are you becoming? And how do you feel about who you're becoming? Let's say a prayer and then we'll dive into it. God, we know that each one of us is somewhere in the process of becoming. In the moments we now spend together, remind us where we are in that process. And what's the next step? Encourage us, challenge us, give us a vision for what life can be. For we ask this in the name of Christ. Amen. Abraham and Sarah gave birth to a child. We saw last week they named him Isaac. Ultimately, Isaac, all grown up, married Rebekah, and Rebekah birthed two children, twins, Esau and Jacob. Esau came out first. Technically, he was the elder. And then a few minutes later, Jacob came along. That's where we pick up the story. Genesis 25, 27, when the boys grew up, Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man living in the tents. Isaac loved Esau because he was fond of game. But Rebekah loved Jacob because, as the next verse tells us, Jacob loved the finer things in life, especially cooking. So you're starting to get the picture, right? Esau is the quintessential manly man, while Jacob is history's first ever meterosexual. Verse 29, once when Jacob was cooking a stew, Esau came in from the field and he was famished. Esau said to Jacob, "Let me eat some of that red stuff, for I am famished." I can just see Jacob rolling his eyes and saying, "Esau, it's not red stuff. It's carne adobada made with red chili peppers and lentils and pork shoulder and garlic cloves." At which point Esau probably belches in his brother's face and says, "Yeah, like I said, give me some of that red stuff." at which point the plot takes an unexpected twist. Jacob says, okay, first, sell me your birthright, verse 31. In that ancient culture, the eldest son was entitled to a double portion of inheritance, twice as much inheritance as his younger brother, plus the right to rule the family. So that was Esau's birthright. Knowing his brother's impulsiveness and knowing that Esau was in a condition of extreme hunger, Jacob sees his opening. He says, okay, you want some of that red stuff? First, sell me your birthright. Esau responds, verse 32, I'm about to die. Of what use is a birthright to me? Jacob said, swear to me first. So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. Thus, verse 34 tells us, Esau despised his birthright, traded it off for a bowl of red stew. That's where the story ends. Now, what are we supposed to make of it? What are we supposed to draw from this? The Bible tells us in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 11, that these things happened, these great Old Testament stories happened, to serve as an example, and they were written down to instruct us on whom the end of the ages come. In other words, all of these great Old Testament stories embedded in them are powerful, practical lessons for living that we're meant to draw from them. So what are the powerful, practical lessons embedded in Esau's story? The answer to that question begins with the recognition that each one of us has also been given a birthright. Follow me now. The Bible tells us, actually Jesus tells us, John 4:24, that God is spirit. That means the essence of God is not matter or material, but something much deeper, something much more enduring, something that is infinite. God, at the essence of God's being, is spirit. The Bible also tells us that as children of God, we have been created in God's image, meaning that we share God's same essence in our own small way. Deep inside of these material bodies lies the essence of who you and I are, which is spirit being. Chips off the old block, children of God created in God's image. So what is the birthright of a spirit being? The Bible tells us, 1 John 3:2, beloved, we are God's children now. What we will be ultimately has not yet been revealed. What we do know is this, when Christ is revealed, we will be like him. There's a lot in that verse to unpack. For starters, it tells us that we are in a process of becoming. In a process of becoming something so extraordinary that we cannot now conceive of it. It's not yet been revealed to us. But what we do know is this much, that we are on a trajectory here in this life where we are intended to become more and more like Jesus until finally, at that ultimate endpoint, we will be like him. So I guess you could say we are put here on earth to be spirit beings in training, kind of like Clarence in It's a Wonderful Life, with the goal of becoming more and more like Jesus until we reach the point where the same spirit that it was in Jesus Christ is now dwelling in us in the same fullness. So that is why we're here. That is our birthright. That's where we're supposed to be headed. We are supposed to be learning here what it means to live in the Spirit fuller and fuller until we reach that end point. When I use that term, spirit being, I'm guessing that to some of your ears it rings a little like New Agey talk, but I'm deliberately using the term that way to help us to think more deeply about what it means. The more common term would be to say you are a spiritual person, you are a spiritual being. But when you hear that, you probably think of a person that's living in accordance with the highest spiritual values. And that is certainly an important, a critical part of the equation, but it also omits another critical part of the equation. When I say you are a spirit being, or if I refer elsewhere to a spirit being, you probably think of a being that has great power. A being that has great access to numinous power. Numinous is a word that means unseen, mystical power. Your birthright as a spirit being is to tap into and to live with all kinds of numinous power. It's your birthright. It's who God created you to be, what God created you to experience. If you've been around here long, you probably know that one of my favorite Bible stories is found in 2 Kings chapter 6. There, an evil king, the king of Aram, decides that he is going to capture the prophet of God, Elisha, and so he sends a whole company of soldiers under cover of darkness to surround the little village of Dothan, where Elisha is staying at the time. When Elisha and his servant come out of the house where they're staying in the morning and look out, they suddenly realize that the entire village has been surrounded by enemy soldiers. Elisha's servant cries out, "Alas, master, what shall we do?" To which Elisha responds in the words of 2 Kings 6:16, "Do not be afraid, for there are more with us than there are with them." At which point the servant probably is thinking, "Elisha, what have you been smoking? Because I'm looking around here and I see you and me and a whole bunch of enemy soldiers and I don't see anybody else." That's when Elijah says, verse 17, "O Lord, please open the eyes of my servant that he may see." So the Lord opened the eyes of the servant, and he saw that the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. The mountains surrounding Dothan were filled with angels in chariots of fire. That's what it looks like to live as a spirit being. Spirit beings are keenly aware that in any given situation, there is far more unseen than seen power that is at work. Our mission as spirit beings in training is to learn how to tap into that spirit power. Our mission is to learn what it means to, quote, "live in the spirit," close quote, rather than living in the flesh as we encounter those situations. That is a term, a phrase that recurs throughout the New Testament. Living in the spirit, not in the flesh. So we can encounter any particular physical situation and respond to it as a flesh and blood situation with the resources available to us and obvious to our eyes, or we can take it even deeper, experience, see, sense the spiritual dimensions of the situation and respond with spiritual power in that situation. We are called as spirit beings to learn what it means to respond to the situations of life in the spirit so that the beauty and power of the spirit can be channeled through us into those situations. And it doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to mean flashes of light and fireworks and supernatural phenomena. It can happen in ways that are very simple and beautiful. One Sunday morning, Dave Travis was sitting in his church, the church he attended on a regular basis. It was in the middle of worship service, and the choir had just finished singing a beautiful worship anthem, and now it was time for the pastor to take to the platform and deliver the sermon. It was a moment of holy expectation that the worship service had been building toward. As the anthem fell silent and the pastor began to move to the platform, there was a teenage girl, Leslie, in the choir, and this was a church where the choir loft was behind the platform, and the choir would remain there throughout the service, but as the anthem came to a close and the pastor was moving into position, Leslie stood up where she was, tripping over several people as she got out the row, and then instead of turning and going out the back door behind the choir loft, she walks out across the pulpit platform, down the stairs, out into the congregation. Dave Travis says, "I found myself thinking, good grief, if she needed to leave at this particular moment, instead of disrupting everything and making a spectacle of herself, she could have simply turned and gone out that back door." But as he continued to watch, she makes her way down to the congregation, about the third row, and walks over and sits down next to another teenage girl, Bethany, a friend of hers, Leslie knew that Bethany, the night before, had lost her beloved grandpa, and that it was a struggle for Bethany to be at church this morning, but she, Bethany, knew that that's where she needed to be in a time like that. So from up in the choir loft, Leslie had seen Bethany coming in, running late, sitting down all alone, and being in the Spirit at that moment. Leslie sensed that God didn't want her friend to be alone. And so at the risk of breaking the norms of that particular worship culture, Leslie just knew in the moment that she had to do what the Spirit was calling her to do, even if others would judge her for it. And as Dave watched Leslie come down and put her arms around Bethany and sit next to her, tears began to fill his eyes because he sensed what was happening, something beautiful, because somebody was responding in the Spirit to the situation at hand. We are called to become the kind of beings who engage in those kinds of sensitive, beautiful, and generous acts. We are called to develop into these beautiful Spirit beings. A little boy walked up to his mom one day and said, "Mom, can I have a juice box?" Mom said, "What are the magic words?" He says the magic words, and she gives him a juice box. The next day, kindergarten, during break time, he walks up to his teacher and says, "Can I have a juice box?" She says, "What are the magic words?" He says the magic words. She is offended. Gets on the phone and calls his mother and says, "Are you teaching your kid sarcasm?" "What?" the mother says. "What on earth happened? What did he say?" "Well, the teacher said he asked me for a juice box. I said, 'What are the magic words?' And he said to me, 'You're thin and you're beautiful.'" You are destined to be thin and beautiful. Well, maybe not the thin part, but definitely the beautiful part. We have been put here on earth to become these beautiful Spirit beings. In a process of becoming something so extraordinary, we can't even fully fathom it now. As a Spirit being, you have been given a double portion of numinous power and are destined to rule, by which I mean you are destined to powerfully influence the course of events by tapping into the spiritual dimensions of situations and letting God's Spirit work through your spirit in amazing ways. I am not saying or meaning to imply by that means you have the power to control ultimately the outcome of every situation. Rather, what I am suggesting is when we are moving in the rhythm of the Spirit, when we are bringing the Spirit into a situation, it allows us to transcend that situation and often transform it. Jerry was the kind of guy you love to hate. Have you ever known somebody that is so relentlessly optimistic you just want to smack them? Jerry was that kind of person. The kind of person that when you would walk up to him and say, "How's it going?" His habitual response was, "If I were any better, I'd be twins." Jerry worked as a restaurant manager. That was his line of work. And he was so inspiring to work for that some of his waiters had followed him from restaurant to restaurant. One of those waiters, Geraldine, one day asked him, "Jerry, how can you manage to be so positive?" He said, "Every morning when I wake up, I say to myself, 'Jerry, you have a choice today. You can choose to be in a good mood or you can choose to be in a bad mood. When something happens, you can choose to be a victim or you can choose to be a victor. I choose the positive side.'" Geraldine says, "It's not that easy." "Yes, it is," he said. "All of life is a choice. When you cut through everything, every situation is a choice. You get to choose how you react to it, and you get to choose how you let other people affect your mood." Geraldine waves him off like, yeah, right. Time passes, and she ends up moving to take a position in another state, loses contact with Jerry, but hears through the grapevine that something terrible happened to Jerry. He made a mistake that no restaurant manager wants to make. He forgot and left the back door to the restaurant unlocked late at night. As they were cleaning up, a burglar invades, robs him at gunpoint, has him open the safe. He's so nervous as he's working the dial on the safe, his hands slip off. The burglar panics and shoots him. He's laying there on the floor in danger of bleeding to death. Paramedics finally arrive, take him to the hospital, 18 hours of surgery, but he survives. 6 months later, Geralyn happens to cross paths with him again. Jerry, she says, how are you doing? He says, if I were any better, I'd be twins. Want to see my scars? No, thanks, she says. But tell me, what was it like? What were you thinking when you were being burglarized? He said, well, the first thing I thought was, I should have locked that back door. But then when I was laying there on the floor bleeding, I thought to myself, hey, I have a choice. I can choose to live or I can choose to die. I choose to live. Weren't you a little bit scared? She asked. Yes, he said. When they rolled me into the emergency room and I saw the look on the faces of the nurses and doctors, it was like they were looking at a dead man. And I knew that I had to do something quick. What did you do? Well, he said, there was this burly nurse that was barking out questions at me. She said to me, do you have any allergies? And I said, yes. Everybody stopped, waiting my response. Well, what are you allergic to? He said, bullets. They laughed. And then he said to them, I am choosing to live, not to die. Operate on me like I'm going to live, not like I'm going to die. As spirit beings, we are meant to learn to be like Jerry, to know the power of the spirit choices that God gives us. You have far more power over the physical circumstances that you are confronting than you realize. Seize that power. Tap into that. Tune into that power. You've been given a double portion of numinous power. Practice tuning into it. Practice using it. Again, my point is not that you get to reverse or avoid all bad outcomes. It's not that you'll never get shot. It's not that you'll never lose a beloved grandpa. My point is simply that when we approach each situation in the spirit, there is a numinous power there that often allows us to transcend, sometimes even to transform the situations that we're facing. We have a choice. Arden Taylor's 4-year-old daughter came to the dinner table one night, grouchy and hating everything. She announced that she hated every type of food that was on the table that night. So mom, trying to think of ways to redirect her and lift her attitude, said, why don't you say the blessing tonight? After a sullen silence, finally her daughter begins to pray. Dear God, I forgive you for this food. We are often like Arden's daughter. We allow circumstances to imprison our spirit rather than allowing our spirit to imprison circumstances. It doesn't have to be that way. Claim your power. You see, Esau's big mistake was that he was so preoccupied with the physical limitations of the situation that he was facing, his hunger and how it felt like he was going to starve to death. He was so preoccupied with the physical limitations of his situation that he failed to see the spiritual dimensions of that situation. He responded impulsively in the moment in a way that felt good in the moment, all the while ignoring who he was and who he was destined to be because of his birthright. As a result, he made what we call a short-term trade-off. Give me some of that red stuff. We will constantly in our own life find ourselves in situations that offer similar choices to us, situations in life that are testing us, who we are becoming and who we want to be. In fact, I faced one of those situations a week ago Saturday night. Of course, we face these situations every day, but I faced one that particularly stuck with me a week ago on Saturday night. It was the night that we had the big community concert here at the church. And by the way, if you missed the community concert, it was such a powerful artistic and worship experience. You really missed something great. But anyway, David and I both came to the community concert, and we came in separate vehicles because I needed to linger afterwards and he wanted to get home. And so once the concert was over, David headed home. If you'll recall, that was a sort of a hit-and-miss night of downpour and rain, and then it would clear off, and then it would downpour and rain. So as he was headed to our house on the far east side of Indianapolis, headed south down 465, there was one of those periods of torrential downpour as he was on 465, and the tractor-trailer truck in front of him started to fishtail, which drove him off the road and into a big pothole that flattened one of his tires. If there is a pothole within 20 miles, David will find it. It's uncanny. So he hits this. It's not like this is the first time this year we've had this. But anyway, the semi tractor-trailer truck drives him off the road. He hits the pothole. The tire is flat. It's pouring rain. He gets out of his car, gets the jack out, tries to start to change the tire, only to realize that the lug wrench doesn't fit the lug nuts. Ford had changed out his lug nuts with a different style and forgot to tell him that meant he needed a new jack. So here he is on the side of the road trying to change the tire. It's pouring rain. He can't change the tire. And of all nights, he left his phone at home. David is never without his phone. He can't breathe without his phone. He can't sleep or eat without. But of all nights, he left his phone at home. So here I come along 465, and now it's cleared off. And I remember right where 465 crosses 70, I remember out of the corner of my eye thinking, oh, that looked like David's car off the side of the road. But I immediately thought, if something happened, he would call me. It couldn't be him, right? And so I wished on by. I end up at home. I'm waiting around. I'm wondering, where is he? Is he okay? I'm calling him on his phone. I'm texting him. Are you okay? No response. Long about 8 o'clock, I finally get a call. He had walked to a gas station about a half mile away. So he called and told me what had happened at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night. Now, to appreciate what I was going through. Not him, what I was going through. You have to know that on Sunday nights, I have kind of a sacred routine. You know, kind of like a baseball player getting ready for a game has a certain routine, something like that. So I know it will surprise you to know that I have a routine. But I have a Saturday night routine that's meant to get me ready for Sunday morning. So 7 o'clock, that means it's time to give our cat her subcutaneous fluids to help her with her kidney disease, and that takes a while. Then 8 o'clock is dinner. And then after dinner at 9 o'clock, I go up to my home office and do a final run-through of the sermon, kind of a dress rehearsal. By the way, do you know studies show that if you try to learn something right before you go to sleep, that enhances your learning. So, and I found that to be true for myself. So 9 o'clock, I practice my sermon, and then 10 o'clock, early to bed, so I'm rested and bright-eyed for church the next morning. So at 8 o'clock, he's calling me on a Saturday night and telling me I've got a flat tire, I can't change the tire, you're going to have to come get me. And in my mind, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, we haven't given the cat her fluids yet, we haven't had dinner. I'm going to have to pick him up, take him all the way across town to the airport to where there's a car rental place still open because we had to be in separate places the next day. And then we'll come all the way back to the east side of town. What time is it going to be? And then we're going to have to give the cat fluids and then still got to eat. And on top of that, I'm either going to have to practice my sermon and get to bed really, really late, or I'm going to have to skip practice. Either way, it's going to be a disaster tomorrow morning. And so you see my dilemma. And in this moment, even as this was unfolding, I remember, oddly enough, thinking to myself, this is a test. I remember thinking, it's situations like this that test who we are and where we are on our spiritual journey. I understood implicitly that I had a choice between responding to this situation with serenity and peace and patience, it'll all be okay, or responding to it with fretfulness, fearfulness, and stressfulness. I chose to split the difference. Isn't that how it often is? You're not as bad as you could be because God's in your life, but you're not nearly as good as you could be, right? I was not mean or surly or anything. I was even-tempered, but I was a frustrated stress puppy. And when it was all done, I looked back and I found myself thinking, I failed that test. I still have so far to go. Don't we all? And you know what? That's okay. That's why we're here. That's why we're spirit beings in training. Life keeps throwing these situations at us. Have you ever found yourself, if you're under the illusion of thinking that your purpose in life is to enjoy the creature comforts of life, that God has put you here to be on vacation, then life is going to make no sense and it's going to drive you nuts. But once you realize, hey, I'm a spirit being and I'm here in training, and all of these challenges and situations in life are being given to me to develop my soul, to give me opportunities, all of a sudden life makes a whole lot more sense. And so today, what I want to challenge us to do is, we're out there in life and these situations are being thrown at us, I want us to get in the habit of asking ourselves, what does it look like to respond in the spirit to this situation? And then to practice those responses so that your soul can grow as beautiful as God dreams it could be. If we could look inside your body and see your spirit in the form of an aura or something, what would we see? Would we see these beautiful, harmonic colors in perfect balance? Or would we see a soul that is shriveled and starving to death? You were meant to be a beautiful spirit being. It is your birthright. Live like it. Learn what it means to live in the spirit. Let me close with this. Barbara was driving her 6-year-old son to piano practice. It was a winter's night and it started to sleet and the roads were getting slick. She almost turned back. Just then, the vehicle in front of them lost control and began to skid sideways and hit a telephone pole at a high rate of speed at the side of the car, hit the telephone pole. As Barbara hit the brakes, they skidded to a stop off the side of the road, and being a nurse, her first impulse was to jump out of the car and rush up to the vehicle that had crashed and see if she could help in some way, but she also had her 6-year-old son with her in the car, and she found herself thinking, what if another vehicle comes along and slides into the back? And there was a part of her that thought, maybe I should just drive on and let somebody else help. But being in the spirit at that moment, she sensed she was there. There was a reason why she, a nurse, was right there at that moment, and she couldn't turn away. So she turns to her son and says, promise me you will stay in the car. He says, I promise. She gets out and runs up toward the vehicle that has crashed. When she looks in the vehicle, it's worse than she had imagined. 2 teenage girls in the vehicle. The one in the passenger seat is obviously already gone. The other in the driver's seat is pinned in the driver's seat, unconscious, still breathing, has a bad gash in her head and is bleeding profusely. So Barbara immediately starts to try to help her, to try to staunch the bleeding. Before long, paramedics arrive on the scene and take over the triage. One of them says to her, you probably saved her life. Thank you. As Barbara is walking back to her vehicle filled with sadness. Why does life have to be this way? She sits down in her car, and her little boy's eyes are wider than saucers. Mom, he says, did you see it? See what? She said. When you were running up to that car, an angel came down and took one of those girls out of the car. Which side of the car, Ben? That one, he points to the passenger side of the vehicle. He took her by the hand, he said, and they floated up to heaven. Just another reminder that every physical situation we encounter in life is surrounded by an even greater spiritual reality. We, as spirit beings in training, are meant to tune into that and then to practice, to learn what it means to respond to these situations in the spirit. Take that seriously. Go home, and when you encounter a situation today or this week at work or with your kids or with your spouse, when you encounter a situation, stop and say, what does it look like to respond in the spirit in this situation? And then practice. Because who you will be, you are now becoming. Your birthright is summarized in 1 John 3:2. Beloved, we are God's children now. What we will ultimately be has not yet been revealed. It's too much to fathom. But what we do know is this: when Christ is revealed, we will be like him. That is your birthright. Live like it. Make the most of it. Keep becoming. Thanks be to God.